Now, speaking of all these matters, we have with us the very fellow I mentioned, Zafar Benkesh. How are you, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. I'm all right, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss these issues.
You know, I was just talking about one inflammatory place, you know, presently occupied by the Americans. There are so many, and we want to get to those, and we definitely want to ask you, for example, about developments in Yemen, where I'll just give you a heads up on that subject. I was reading Sharmeen Narwani saying that there are mass defections from those Yemenis who are opposed to Ansar Allah because of the the courage displayed by them, that actually there's movement there. So that later on, I want to ask you about that, but we really have to ask you, election is coming up on February the 8th. They called it an election in Pakistan. And at the same time, now Imran Khan has had new charges brought against him. It's my understanding. One of them involving a claim that is about his wife, that they did not get a proper divorce. Please inform us, how bad is the situation? What do you make of this current problem?
You see, the number of allegations that have been made against Imran Khan, who's facing something like 180 charges on various issues. This latest one, which related to his marriage, was the most grievous because this basically is an attack on his personal character and that of his wife. And behind this whole thing is basically the army generals, the ones at the top who are calling the shots and who are dictating to the courts as to what they are supposed to do or what kind of verdict they are supposed to deliver. Mm-hmm. The general's thinking was that by charging Imran Khan and his wife with this marriage, which according to them was not done properly, it was done illegally, that they were trying to portray Imran Khan as an immoral person. This conviction actually has had completely the opposite effect among the people of Pakistan. They are so enraged, they are so horrified by what the courts have done and how they have trampled upon the basic principles of Islam by bringing these charges against Imran Khan. Just to sort of clarify for your listeners, under Islamic law, a woman who is divorced has to wait for a certain period of time before she can remarry. And this is, of course, you know, mentioned in the Quran. And the reason for that waiting period is to make sure that woman is not pregnant, so that it comes to the issue of the child that would be born. In this particular, and the other point under Islamic law is that the word of the woman has to be taken into account. Nobody else. That is her exclusive right. And, of course, that woman, who's Imran Khan's wife, legally wedded, she gave a statement in court that she was divorced in April 2017. And then she married Imran Khan in January of 2018. So that is something like 7-8 months later. Mm-hmm. And at the time, in 2018, her ex-husband, in an interview, and this is on you know, various social media platforms, he was asked about his ex-wife, and he said, she's a very pious woman. She's, of course, very conservative in her outlook because she maintains the complete hijab and so on, and she doesn't talk to strangers, and that I have nothing but praise for her character. Now, this man, then last year, he was picked up by Pakistani intelligence agencies. Of course, you know, he used to work in the customs department, and in the customs department in Pakistan is one of the most corrupt departments. And this man was notorious for his corruption. So obviously, the intelligence agencies knew about it. They picked him up, and they kept him and grilled him for a few days. And then he came out, and then he made this scandalous allegation that, he had not divorced his wife until November of 2017, and so his ex-wife had not waited for the appropriate period before Imran Khan married her. Now, any person who contradicts himself like that, his testimony is not acceptable under Islamic law, because he said something 6 years ago, which he contradicted last year and then this year in court. So his testimony cannot be accepted. Mm-hmm. But the generals, of course, were determined to try to tarnish Imran Khan's name and reputation in the eyes of the traditional people of Pakistan, who are, of course, very conservative. But as I said, this has backfired on them because the people have been enraged by what the court has done. And they have now vowed to come out even in larger numbers. Even those people that were not supporters of Imran Khan, they said that this is the straw that broke the camel's back, that these generals have become so obnoxious in their behavior that they're going to go ahead and support Imran Khan in the coming election. Mm-hmm. Of course, the difficulty is that Imran Khan's party is not allowed to use an election symbol. So that makes it difficult for the rural masses to determine who the candidate is. Secondly, many candidates have been kidnapped. Even today, Imran Khan's party, not his party, but his supporters, were holding a rally in one of the cities in the province bordering Afghanistan. And the police attacked them. They wouldn't let them hold that rally, although other parties are facilitated to hold their election rallies. Mm-hmm. But the people were so enraged that they turned around and they started pelting the police with stones. And there were hundreds of heavily armed policemen. They drove the policemen away. And they said, we are not going to put up with this kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. So these situations, these difficulties, the candidates that support Imran Khan are facing. Imran Khan himself is barred from contesting the elections. But we'll see what happens on February the 8th. There is common feeling in the country that the army will rig the elections and they will bring their own favorite political persons to power because they want to achieve certain objectives through them. Mm-hmm. And the most likely candidate is Nawaz Sharif, a certified thief who was prime minister 3 times, and all 3 times he was thrown out because of his corruption.
And he's come back to the country, has he not? He was abroad.
Yes, exactly. He came back on October the 21st of last year after he made a deal with the army that he would not be arrested, that all the charges against him would be dropped, that he would not be arrested upon arrival, whereas in fact he was an absconder. The courts had declared him an absconder, and he should have been arrested the moment he landed in the country. But they didn't give him, the protocol of a prime minister.
Everybody, they forgot that.
Yeah, exactly. They just forgot all of that. And even now, he's not the prime minister, but wherever he goes with an official protocol with security details that the government provides him. I mean, these kinds of outrageous things are taking place in Pakistan, and they're making a mockery of democracy. But the good thing is that after a long time, there is a lot of awareness among the masses. Their consciousness has been awoken thanks largely to Imran Khan's campaigns, his courage, his determination to stand up to these brutal generals, and to the Americans, incidentally. This is ultimately standing up to the Americans. So that's the reason why Imran Khan is being punished, because he stood up to the Americans. And we know the way the Americans operate, and they target leaders in different countries. They do not follow the dictates of the...
It was quite dramatic, we do recall, because he told... One of the things he seems to do, which is apparently groundbreaking, is he's very transparent. And so he confided in front of the Pakistani people how he had been spoken to by Western ambassadors, is my recollection, which, of course, I mean, that's electric, right? When he said they tried to tell me as a leader what I was going to do. And that was, I recall, I mean, that must have gone through like a shockwave in Pakistani society. And I'm sure they were proud of him that he said, told them, no, I'm not going to, I don't follow orders. I have to do what is best for the country.
Exactly. In fact, he said that the Americans told him to pursue certain policies. And in a public address, Imran Khan was addressing hundreds of thousands of people, and he publicly stated that they demanded this of me, and I told them, are we your slaves?
Yes.
We will not do this.
Yes.
And then there was another occasion, this was in 2022, Imran Khan was being interviewed by one of the internet channels, and he was asked if the Americans asked for military bases, will you give them military bases? And his famous words were, absolutely not. Uh-huh. And of course, that was something that the Americans are not used to hearing from leaders of third world countries. And they therefore targeted him using the Pakistan army. And this is another instance of how, the charges that have been brought against Imran Khan, one of the charges against him was that there was a letter sent by the Pakistani ambassador after he had a meeting with the U.S. Undersecretary of State, a fellow by the name of Donald Liu. And Donald Liu had actually said in so many words to the Pakistani ambassador that if you remove Imran Khan from power through a parliamentary vote, this was in March of 2022, then all will be forgiven. And the forgiven aspect, of course, was that in February, Imran Khan had gone to Moscow to meet President Putin of Russia.
Yes.
And his trip was planned months in advance. So his trip to Moscow was on February 23rd. And on February 24th, he met President Putin. And the same day, of course, Russia had launched its special military operation in Ukraine. And the Americans were upset because they thought that Imran Khan should have canceled his trip, number one. And actually, Donald Liu even said that Pakistan, of course, this matter when there was a vote in the UN Security Council to condemn Russia, Pakistan abstained from that vote. It would not condemn Russia. Mm-hmm. And so Donald Liu said that Pakistan was showing too much aggressive neutrality. These are his exact words.
Aggressive neutrality?
Aggressive.
Brutal. Brutal neutrality.
Exactly. And so, this, this, of course, this demand was made of the Pakistani military, who carried out the coup against Imran Khan by manipulating the vote in the National Assembly. And when Imran Khan said that, well, this is what the Americans had demanded, and this coup has been carried out against me, then the general said, oh, he's revealing state secrets. But the general actually carried out the coup.
Yeah, it's a state secret that we carried out a coup.
Revealing state secrets. So you can see the ridiculous nature
it is.
Of general,
well, actually, it's rather like watching the Canadian Parliament, who wants to operate as much as possible based on secrets. which we, the public, are not allowed to see. But so, and people, they have this thing about foreign interference here, but they want Canadian citizens to be brought in and be accused of things, but they're not allowed to see what the information is that is the basis of it. It seems to be a common disease of governments that feel insecure, is that they love secrets, and they say, why am I being arrested? Well, we can't tell you. and but we are a free country. Oh, I see. Exactly. We're a free country. I want to ask you about the election, and I'm personally very pleased that I can access that at this so far, the X or tweets. I'll get there yet. Tweets of Imran Khan himself, and I notice that he is really putting in energy to help, to advise voters. He says, do you have a voter slip, you and your family? Do you have the names of the people we want elected? That is really hands-on effort to try to fight the election in a sense. But and I guess there's a second question here. Do Pakistani Canadians vote in this?
Well, first of all, in Pakistan itself, Imran Khan has energized the youth of Pakistan, who constitute 60% of the population today. And this younger generation is, of course, tech-savvy generation. They are extremely active on social media platforms. And despite all of the hurdles that are thrown in the way of Imran Khan's candidates, this younger generation is really, really doing a remarkable job. And so they are helping people to identify their candidates, the symbol they have. And this is what really terrifies the military, because they cannot counter them. Mm-hmm. It is commonly anticipated that on election day, the internet will mysteriously go down. It happened a few days ago when Imran Khan was holding a virtual rally on the internet, and throughout the country, the internet was down. People could not access his virtual rally. This happened earlier on as well when he was holding a fundraising campaign against the internet had gone down. But mm-hmm. prior to that, obviously, his supporters are, mobilizing the public to make sure that they will come out in large numbers to vote in the elections.
But those candidate names now would be individuals who have had to assume a different party name or running as independents. Is that right?
They are not assuming any other party's name. They are all running as independent.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, each candidate also has to have a symbol, election symbol, mm-hmm. which makes it very, very difficult for ordinary people to figure out, because there are literally thousands of candidates running as independents.
Yes. So when he says you have to get a list, I mean, that is precise advice. I mean, make sure you and your family and friends who the names are. And his, obviously, zealots or people working for Imran Khan are making sure, as best they can, that people be able to pick out those people who would support him.
Yes. And with respect to your second question, when Imran Khan was in power, he wanted to present a bill in parliament to say that Pakistanis living abroad should have the right to vote in elections. Many countries in the world, arrange these. The Americans do it, the British do it, the Lebanese, the Syrians, they all allow their citizens.
I think the Islamic Republic does it.
Exactly. So wherever they are, they can vote, so long as they can prove that they are citizens of Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So Imran Khan wanted to pass that bill, but it he wasn't allowed to. Then he said that we should have electronic voting machines so that people can vote through these electronic voting machines. That was passed, but when his government was overthrown and these new jokers were brought into power, the military basically had that canceled through that illegal parliament that, you know, they would not allow electronic voting to take place because they knew that through electronic voting, it is a lot more difficult to cheat. It's a lot more difficult to intimidate voters, etc. Now, today, the situation is as follows. Any person of Pakistani origin, if he or she wishes to vote, they have to go to Pakistan to vote. So you can see the kinds of, hurdles.
So if you're very wealthy, you can go home and vote for the army.
Exactly. So they're making it virtually impossible for, Pakistanis living abroad. And there are, incidentally, 10 million of them.
Whoa.
And the overwhelming majority, of course, they're not all here. Most of them are in the Middle East. But the overwhelming majority of them support Imran Khan and his party or even his banned party and the candidates that are affiliated with his party. So these voters are excluded. But even so, because of the fact that there are about 20 to 30 million new voters have come on board since the last election.
30 million?
Younger voters, that have come of age. They're all overwhelmingly supportive of Imran Khan and his party and his candidates. So there is a lot of hope that perhaps these people will be able to make a breakthrough. Yeah. My fear is that the military and the intelligence agencies, etc., they are so corrupt that they will rig the elections. They're already doing all kinds of nasty things. For instance, they are some of the tricks, dirty tricks that they use is if, let's say, I'm in a particular constituency, and my wife, we both are in a particular constituency, they would allocate one polling station to me and a different one tens of miles away for my wife. Just make it as difficult as possible because they know that, who are the people that are generally supportive
but
of.
But if they do, it'll be so, won't it be so obvious that they will have almost a very unhappy population capable of going back to the street, basically, right?
Correct. That is correct. I mean, they are using other dirty tricks as well. For instance, the agency that checks people's ID cards, it's called NADRA, National, something Data Registration Agency, whatever. They have all the information, so they know, for instance, from my Pakistani ID card that I've not voted in elections for decades. I've not been to Pakistan for decades, so they can actually issue my ID card, a fake one, to somebody else, and in my name, they facilitate that vote.
You will vote for who they like. Yes,
they like exactly.
Wow.
The next thing they're doing is they're even digging out dead person's ID cards, and they're also lining up people to vote on behalf of the dead people.
Yes. Well, now that's a Chicago tradition, actually.
Exactly.
Americans are not alien to this process.
Well, I'm not surprised because, the Pakistani military and its intelligence agencies learn a lot of their dirty tricks from the Americans.
Where else?
The American example. So
go to the best. We're speaking to Zafar Bangash, who is from Pakistan and, of course, has lived this experience. Zafar, I have to ask you about this development with Yemen and the matter that I was mentioning. Sharmeen Narwani, in whom I have a lot of trust, I think you have a high regard for, you can speak for yourself, but she says that the bombing of Yemen by the Americans and the Brits has actually caused those armed groups who were opposed to Ansar Allah to begin to defect and to come over to them. Are you hearing that or seeing that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, you know, the courage that Ansar Allah have shown, and we need to keep in mind that Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East. And yet, those people are so courageous, so dedicated, that they withstood the Saudi, Emirati, U.S.-backed, British, French-backed attacks for more than 8 years. And they actually not only withstood their ground, but they were able to inflict substantial damage on the Saudis, on their oil refineries, etc. And now they are taking on the Americans, the Israelis, the Brits, and others in the Red Sea, particularly around Bab al-Mandab Strait, which is a narrow strait.
By the way, could we stop just there? I love the translation of that spot is, what is it, the gate of grief.
Yeah, exactly, because, you see, being too narrow,
dangerous shipping.
Exactly, it was very dangerous for shipping. You know, ships could easily hit the rocks if they weren't in the right position, etc. So, Bab, of course, means gate or door, and so, you know, that's basically what it is. Anyway, so these Ansarullah have vowed, they made it very clear, they say that we demand that Israel stop its onslaught on Gaza and that there should be an immediate ceasefire. And so long as the Israelis continue to kill innocent people in Gaza, we are not going to allow any ships, if they are Israeli-registered ships, certainly they are not passing through there. Secondly, any ships that are carrying their goods to Israel will not be allowed to go through. Other ships, you know, obviously ships have their manifest, they tell their final destination and the goods that they are carrying. They said, we are not going to stop other ships. They can pass through here, but we will certainly not allow any ships that are delivering goods to Israel. Mm-hmm. And of course, now we see that the U.S., Britain, etc., they have all joined in this assault on Yemen. And if they think that by, you know, launching some cruise missiles at Yemen that they are going to be able to intimidate them, they are completely mistaken. Because the Yemenis have more than 8 years of experience.
They have calluses from being bombed.
Yes.
And by the way, I guess we should remind people, the fact is that the UK and the US were actively bombing for all those years alongside the Saudis.
Yes, they were involved in it. They were basically determining targets for the Saudis, providing them intelligence.
So they've really just resumed the old process. But they do, this thing of losing ground is quite dramatic. I mean, if those pretenders from Aden, who I guess live in Saudi Arabia, if their ground forces begin to quit because of this, that was something I hadn't heard about. I hadn't realized that was possible.
Yes.
But there are apparently commanders and battalions who are now showing up in Sana'a, that's how you pronounce it, where the Ansar Allah is based.
That is correct.
That's an unanticipated shift on the ground, if that holds up.
Yes, of course. Also, you see, the attacks that the Americans are carrying out in Yemen are illegal under American law. And this issue has been raised in the U.S. Congress as well, that if Biden wants to carry out these attacks, then he must seek permission from the U.S. Congress, which is not to him. But, I mean, you know, the American successive American administrations have acted as outlaws, and they don't care even for their own laws, although it probably is likely to have consequences come the elections in October of this year, the presidential elections. So, you know, what the Americans are doing, obviously, they have now shown themselves to be fully involved in the war on behalf of Israel, and they are therefore complicit in the crimes that Israel is committing in Gaza, which the International Court of Justice ruled on February.
And by the way, shouldn't we say this about Canada? I mean, it's baldly obvious. We had General Gallant of Israel say there won't be any food, there won't be any water, there won't be any power. And the Court of Justice cited that, among others, as this is one indication of genocidal intent. And then Canada and the United States, UK, say, well, we hear bad reports about UNRWA, so we are going to cut off funding for water and food and power. I mean, we're co-conspirators.
Yes, you see, the allegation that UNRWA, this was an allegation that the Israelis made, that UNRWA, some of its Palestinian staff were involved in the October 7th attack. Now, this is an allegation that Israel has made, and they said, well, we found out from the list of UNRWA representatives or UNRWA members, because there are, it has
13,000 people.
13,000 people on its payroll, and they every year provide that list, especially those that are operating in Gaza. They provide that to the Israelis, that these are our, you know, staff members. Now, Hamas doesn't carry a membership list. Hezbollah doesn't have a membership list that they put on a computer and so on.
Yes.
So how on earth did Israel figure that out? I mean, Israelis are compulsive liars. You know, you will recall that in the initial days, the Israelis alleged that Hamas fighters had beheaded 40 Israeli babies.
Yes.
It turned out to be entirely false. It was completely false. Then they made an allegation that Hamas fighters had killed people in kibbutz.
Well,
the Haaretz newspaper said that that's a complete lie, that these people were killed by Israeli helicopters and Israeli tanks, and they gave evidence. They said that, you know, the houses that were blown up with heavy weapons, and Hamas fighters did not have any
heavy weapons. Yeah, so, I mean, but that speaks to Canada is complicit. I mean, if you had an allegation of someone misbehaved toward a patient or something in a hospital, you don't close the hospital. You simply say, well, there's apparently an individual who might have. But here you say, no, we cut the funding, which means, you know, if you cut funding, that's a material act. That means that something is not purchased and something is not delivered.
Correct. You see, this is precisely the problem. And at the same time, many Canadians have demanded of the Canadian government that they should stop supplying weapons to Israel.
Yeah.
Canada has not done that. It continues to supply Israel weapons with which it carries out the genocide in Gaza, and it has cut off funding to UNRWA, which is vital for the survival of the people of Gaza. It is the only UN agency that is able to fulfill the needs of the people there. You know, Israel is allowing less than, despite the fact that, you know, there have been so many agreements through the UN as well as the demand from the International Court of Justice that Israel must allow humanitarian aid to go into Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
The Israelis are refusing to allow
Their civilians now are blocking the roads.
Yes.
That's another crime, by the way. I hope someone takes that to the the International Court of Justice and says, you ordered them to behave correctly. Guess what is happening? Because this has to end up in front of the United Nations General Assembly, in my opinion.
Yeah, in a week's time, the ICJ is going to be holding its other meeting because it had given 1 month's time to Israel to
report back.
Tell us whether how you have complied with these directives. So yeah. We will see what happens there, but the fact that Israel is not allowing humanitarian aid to go in, and I want to emphasize and point out that the most critical things is food and water, of course, but medicines, desperately needed medicines,
yes.
Particularly anesthesia. In Gaza hospitals, doctors have had to amputate children's limbs without using anesthesia.
And how many hospitals are left?
Exactly. Out of the 36 hospitals in Gaza, only 16 are only partially functional, according to the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
So that means that these hospitals have been destroyed. There is no medicine there. There are no facilities. There is no power. I mean, virtually nothing exists. And the doctors are, I mean, even doctors have been, you know, taken, killed, and, you know, all kinds of terrible things have been done to them. These are international crimes that Israel is committing.
Yes. No, and I'm really glad that we have to close, but I'm so glad you emphasized all that. Zafar Ben-Gash, obviously February 8th, we're going to be thinking about
Sellers & Newell.
We're going to have to call
we
you
have
back.
Lots of great books
so,
in English, but in our endlessly fascinating
I think
and
we've been cut in.
Basement,
so thank you very much.
We also have